Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Joined by Paul Dottino, I am John Schmelk. The way you get involved is to call 201-939-4513 or go to Twitter at hashtag Giants Chat as we talk Giants football here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Paul, we haven't had you on since the Viking game. I don't want to spend a ton of time on that in the opening because me and Sean O'Hara had that all day yesterday on the show.
I'm sure you did.
But give me your top two or three takeaways from the game against the Vikings.
Well, the Giants moved the ball again offensively, but then when push came to shove, they couldn't get enough points. I mean, it's not like they were held to 150 yards on the day. They did have over 300 yards. I think 18 first downs, was it? Mm-hmm. Was it 16? Mm-hmm. See, 18 first downs?
Yes.
So, you know, it wasn't like they were totally shut down. The offensive line actually protected Eli Manning fairly well. I think you'd have a hard time arguing with that. He was on his feet for most of the game.
Agreed.
So, you know, to me, you got to tweak things, and that's how things are going to get back on track. I don't think this is Disasterville. I don't think the team has fallen off the cliff and that it's not repairable. As you know, John, in this league, everybody overreacts week to week. That's just the way it's going to be.
Overreaction Monday. Or in this case, overreaction Tuesday.
Yes, it's got to be that way because that's the way the environment is.
There's only 16 games.
Correct.
We get all that.
But I will say that on the basis of some of the things that I did see that were very productive, and this is, by the way, how a coach has to look at it.
Right.
He has to look at it and say, okay, take the emotion out. Let's look at every single piece. And he puts them all on the table, and he looks at every single piece, and he says, okay, these are the ones that were effective, and this is what worked well, and this is what didn't. And at the end of the day, I think if you look at it, a lot of the Giants' pieces actually work pretty well. They ran the ball fairly well. Darkwell looked pretty good. Mm-hmm. You know, I just think, bottom line, it's not as big as a disaster as emotions would like to lead you to believe.
Yeah, I had somebody calling yesterday at the end of the show, and I got a little hot because he said, this means that we're going to have another 6-10 season. And my answer was, and we had one of these, I believe, in our 30 questions in 30 days heading up into the season, what do you think the toughest game of the Giants' schedule was? I picked out the game on Monday. I thought that was the toughest game on the Giants' schedule. In Minnesota, new building, Monday night, excellent defense. Heck, I thought AP was going to be playing back when I made that statement back in, you know, June or whatever. He's not. But this was always one of the toughest games on the schedule
there's
for the
no
Giants.
Question.
Now, and then a guy on Twitter got back to me. He's like, well, does that mean you don't get upset about the loss? No. Of course you get upset about the loss. But you don't treat it as though it's something that's going to doom your season and is a terrible thing moving forward that means you're not going to win a lot of games. I'd be much more upset about losing to Washington last week than I would be about losing to Minnesota.
Let's make something very clear, John. There is not a prognosticator, either in Vegas or otherwise, who picked the Giants to win this game. They were the underdogs in this game.
Yeah.
They were a strong underdog in this game.
Absolutely.
And so what happened in the game is what most people thought should logically happen. Mm-hmm. Now, again, you don't want to lose it. You want to win. You'd like to steal one. You'd like to grab an upset. But by all means, don't be flushing the season after
right.
this.
Especially with all the injuries on defense at the Giants.
The secondary, four of the top six guys were not available.
And I think that's the perfect way then to segue into this game against the Packers.
Go.
Because the Giants are going to have to get some of those guys healthy. Now, I have not watched any Packer tape yet, have you?
No.
I have not either. But I have looked at the numbers with the Packers so far this year to give me a little bit of preparation for the game on Sunday. I'll look at the tape next couple of days. What strikes me, and you'll see some of these stats on Giants Press Conference Live on MSG Networks at 6 p.m. tonight.
Yeah, time change, guys.
Yes.
Time change.
Because everything's later on in the day.
Everything got moved around today. 6 p.m. MSG tonight for myself and Jeff Fiegels.
Correct. Fiegels is in for David Deal because, again, the time changes messed everything up.
Yep.
Paul, what do you think? I'm going to play a little game with you. I like playing this game with Fiegels.
That's right.
Where do you think the Packers rank in the NFL in terms of yards per game?
I think they're probably somewhere in the teens.
They are 29th.
Are they that low?
At 293 yards per game.
See, I have not even begun studying yet.
And this is why I'm doing this with you, because I was shocked when I saw that this morning.
We have a few hours to the show, and trust me, I was looking to cram.
So, where do you think they rank in terms of points per game in the NFL?
Well, there can be opportunistic situations that could make them a little higher than that, but based on what you just told me, I'm going to say they're probably mid-20s.
11th. And funnily enough, if that's a word, funny enough, the Giants are the opposite. The Giants are averaging 18 points per game, Paul. Where do you think that ranks in the NFL?
18?
Yes, that's where they are right now. 18.2.
18's got to be in the bottom five.
They are 27th. Where do you think they are in terms of yards per game?
Yards, I bet you they're in the top six.
They are sixth. So these two teams are on the opposite ends of the spectrum right now. One of the reasons the Giants are able to be sixth in the league in yards per game, yet 27th in points per game.
Turnover ratio.
Turnover ratio, penalties, and a brutal 46% red zone percentage, which is 28th in the NFL. That's how you're sixth in the league in yards, but you're 27th in points. The Packers are the opposite. The Packers traditionally, and Aaron Rodgers is great at this ball, they do not turn the ball over.
Right.
They do not throw interceptions. They do not make mistakes. Despite the fact they're only averaging 294 yards per game, they're third in the NFL in third down conversions at 50%. Excellent.
Outstanding.
Here's a number that shows you why, though. They're only averaging 294 yards per game. They only have 7 pass plays this year of 20 yards or more.
Okay.
Fewest in the National Football League. Granted, they've only played 3 games. They were on a bye last week. Most of their NFL teams have only played 4. But for the Green Bay Packers to be averaging 2.3 plays of 20-plus yards per game through the air per game is not typical.
No, it's not.
So I was surprised at how much this Packer offense has struggled this year. Now, they're a little bit better in the run game this year. They're in the teens in terms of rush yards per game. Eddie Lacy's around four and a half yards per carry.
He's a power back.
He's fine. But they're not using him a lot. He's only averaging 15 or so carries a game this year. And James Starks isn't averaging a lot of carries either. So I just thought it was interesting to see that the Packers offense, and you think of Aaron Rodgers, Jordy Nelson, high-powered, wing-ding, throw it all over the place, we're going to score a million points, has not been the case so far this year at 294 yards per game and 25 points per game.
Well, look, in years past, they would have 4 or 5 legitimate big play targets that he could throw the ball to. That's not quite the same now anymore.
Well, you wonder if Jordy Nelson's the same guy off an ACL. Randall Cobb seemed to take a big step back last year.
He absolutely did.
Devontae Adams has not developed like they would have
liked.
Never did. And they don't have a big-time tight end.
Okay. This is not the days of John Jefferson and James Lofton anymore.
No, it is not. And as we know, the Giants are still doing a pretty good job, though you would have liked to see them do a little bit better against Minnesota, stopping the run. But I will say this, too.
It wasn't bad.
It wasn't bad, but it wasn't great.
No, it was okay.
Vikings average over 4 yards per carry.
You sure?
McKinnon did, at least.
Maybe McKinnon did. It was for the team. It was like 33 carries for 105 yards.
McKinnon was like 18 for 85, though, something like that,
right? Because he had a couple of longer runs.
Correct.
But as a whole, Vikings did not run the ball that well.
Fair enough. McKinnon had a good day, but as a team, they did not. You're right. Asiata was something like 1.5 yards per carry.
Every time
like
he touched it, he got plastered.
Yeah, he didn't have much of a chance, to be quite honest with you.
No.
Anyway, that being said, with the Packers offense maybe not being what it used to be, Paul, the Giants still need to get some of these guys back in the secondary.
Yeah.
Because as much as they struggled the first 4 games, if you're lining up, I don't care what wide receivers Aaron Rodgers have, and I did watch the tape in preparation for the Viking game, I made sure I watched the Vikings play the Packers because I thought it would help me prepare for both games. So I did watch a lot of the Packers offense from their last game against Minnesota, and quite frankly, their receivers couldn't get open. Now, we saw the Vikings do that to the Giants receivers on Monday, so no surprise. But if you have Trevin Wade and Leon Hall and Janoris Jenkins and that same group you had last year running out there, Aaron Rodgers is going to find some holes. It's just the way it goes.
I will say this. Bradford threw a lot of really nice passes the other night.
Down the field he did.
Absolutely. I do want to give him some credit here. It's easy to just say, well, your guys didn't do what they were supposed to do. He threw a couple of just absolutely gorgeous deep balls that were smack on the money.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to give him credit for that. I don't want to just say that the Giants were horrible in coverage. That's really not true. Bradford threw some really nice balls. And Rodgers, if you think that those balls were nice, you got to look at Aaron Rodgers because he's going to throw many more of those
that
are going to be really nice.
Bradford was able to find the matchups he wanted.
That he did. He picked on the guys he wanted to pick on.
Correct.
Here's what I'm going to tell you, folks. I don't know if we got calls yet, but here's one thing.
I want to hold you up one second. Yes.
There's one point that I really do want to make. I felt going into the Giants game, it was critical for the Giants pass rush to raise its game much higher than it has so far this year. I fully believed that at least one of those defensive ends, and I'm going to say it for this week's game too, has to have one of those NFC Defensive Player of the Week type performances. Two and a half sacks, a forced fumble, six tackles, a pass deflection. I'm talking about an impact breakout game. I think that Vernon and JPP have played okay. They've played well.
I think Vernon's been better than JPP.
But well, I'm sorry. Right now, I'm going to put the heat on both of those guys because I don't think well is good enough. I think spectacular is what they need now.
I get
to
that.
Get themselves out of this quicksand, they need a spectacular impact game out of one of those defensive ends that is going to wreck Aaron Rodgers and his offense. It's not okay now just to be good. You got to be great.
I agree with that. And just want to throw one other number out there as you take a look at the sack stats with the Green Bay Packers this year. Now, remember, they've only played three games. So the fact that they've given up, they're right smack 16th in the league in terms of sacks allowed. But again, that's only in three games. The rest of the league has played four. So they've given up eight sacks this year
in three games.
So you're looking at 2.5, give or take, sacks per game from that
Bradford
offensive line
been sacked
unit.
Six times in three games.
And here's the thing. Aaron Rodgers is known for holding the football.
At times.
He's greedy.
He wants to make a play.
He wants to make a play. So if you can cover long enough, you can get there. And the Packers aren't running out a bunch of all-pro offensive linemen either.
No.
They're fine, but they're not great. And they cut Josh Sitton, one of their best offensive linemen, for salary cap reasons, late in the summer. So, just saying, you should have the ability to get to Aaron Rodgers a little bit, and that's what the Vikings did a couple weeks ago when they had a sack parade versus him.
Make it happen. That's it. Make it happen.
Now it's time for you to make it happen at 201-939-4513. We're taking your calls. Anything you want to talk about the New York Football Giants, we'll take them right now. Big Blue Kickoff Live, and we'll check out your tweets at hashtag Giants Chat. I got to only one yesterday. We had so many calls. So I'll make sure we get to enough of your tweets today. I'll even go back to some of yesterday's tweets, and we'll answer some of your questions. And Dave Dominic looks it up for me. Funnily is a word.
Okay.
I didn't make it up.
John, I did not know that.
Neither did I. Thank you, Dave Dominic. Made me feel better about myself. Not a complete moron, just semi. Let's go to Ken in New Jersey. He's up next. Ken, how are you?
Hey, Paul. Hey, John. How you guys doing?
Hello.
Hi, Ken.
I tried to get in yesterday. Obviously, there was a lot of angry people trying to call you guys, so I couldn't get in.
Relax.
I'm not angry. I'm more angry about the Washington game than I am about the Minnesota game.
Man,
I was kind of prepared for this one.
Yep.
Yeah, I am. Very, very angry about that. We had too many opportunities to win that game to throw it away the way we did. Beckham looks to me like he feels like everybody's against him, and I can actually see why. He feels like if he does something good, he's going to get called back by a flag. If he does something bad, he's definitely getting flagged. He feels like there's defensive backs getting away with stuff against him, and he's getting away with absolutely nothing. So I guess if you wanted to call the refs the HR department of the NFL, they're supposed to weed out, you know, the bad stuff and the good stuff and all that. Doesn't seem like they're, doing their job pretty much when it comes to him. But other than that, as soon as he didn't get those two flags for the late hit out of bounds, you've seen it on Beckham's face. The game was over for him. He was done. He didn't want to play anymore. He's not having fun playing football anymore, he's saying now. I mean, I'm not really trying to rehash that. But it feels like, from a Giants fan's perspective, it feels like there's a lot of yellow hitting the ground on our side, and there really isn't too much on the other side. And I'll give you a little perspective on that. On the Dallas game, I watched the Dallas game on Sunday, and their left guard, I believe it was, jumped, false started, at least a half a dozen times.
Yeah, left tackle. It was Chaz Green against the 49ers was early a lot in that game.
Yeah, and they're not throwing flags because of it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, if you're going to nitpick, go right ahead, but it's got to be across the board, like Sean O'Hara said yesterday. It's got to be across the board. If Beckham's going to get a flag for one thing, other people need to get flags for things
Ken,
they do against us.
Ken, right. Your overall point's 100% right, and Sean and I both said yesterday neither one of us liked the unsportsmanlike conduct penalty. We thought, especially from where the flag was thrown, I'm not sure how that official saw what happened when the three officials around the play didn't. I thought that was odd. But that being said, and I said this yesterday too, I would have given double unsportsmanlike penalties on the next play if I hadn't given it on the first one when the two guys, after they went out of bounds, decided to run into each other like morons. So to me, Ken, you can't get yourself wrapped up in the officials. Do you know why? You can't control them. Fans can't control them. Players can't control them. Teams can't control them. Whether the calls are unfair or not, we're not making that judgment call. If you're a player, if you think you're being treated unfairly, you know what the worst thing you can do is make a spectacle of yourself and make yourself more of a target. You have to live with it and just move on and put your head down and be a football player. It's the only way to effectively deal with something, even if you think it's unfair.
Yeah, I agree 100%. My job is not fair on a daily basis. I have to deal with all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
I understand that aspect. I really do. This team is way too good to be playing the way they are. I understand we got some injuries. It feels like other teams are able to deal with that a little bit better than we are over the years. Hopefully we get some guys back this week. I don't see any reason why we can't win this game. There's a lot of reasons why we could beat ourselves, but there's really no reason why we can't win this game. I mean, we've beaten the Packers in the playoffs and championship games. There's no reason why we can't win a regular season one. That's all I got, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you, Ken.
The Giants spent an awful lot of effort during the offseason to dramatically improve their defense. And, you know, you can only do so much in one offseason to fix so many holes. And unfortunately, what you've seen now because of the injuries is that the depth on defense isn't where they'd like it to be. But given the fact that they had so many things that had to be repaired in the starting lineup on the defense, it's unrealistic to expect that they could change the starting lineup's complexion and then the depth as well all in one shot. It's just not realistic. So what you do is you repair as much as you can with the resources you have, and they repaired the starting defense.
Yeah.
And for that, you need to be grateful. And then you got to cross your fingers and say, well, we'll try to get to the depth next year. But right now, there's not much you can do. It is what it is, and you got to hope that the guys who are backing up are going to be adequate enough to get the job done. And what we saw was the secondary was really hurting the other night.
Well, I remember,
and they need to get back as soon as possible.
They're at their fifth safety right now. I mean, Andrew Adams is their fifth safety. Michael Thompson was ahead of him. Burhey was ahead of him. And Darian Thompson was ahead of him. So that's safety number five. And right now you're on cornerback number five with Leon Hall being number four. And then, you know, Trevon Wade being number five. And now Michael Hunter number six, who also got some run in that game on Monday night. So,
you know,
you aren't going to have great players as your fifth safety and sixth cornerback. It's just not going to happen. Now, you would like for the guys you have to play well, and they'll have another chance this week, depending on what happens with Eli Apple and Dominique Rodgers-Camardi. Leg injuries, corners, you never know how long these things are going to take. You hope DRC, since he dressed, maybe he's a little bit closer. I guess that would be the logical thing to think.
I don't know.
Until they hit the practice field today, and if they're not out there, you know, you have to be worried.
Might not know till Saturday.
Yeah. You have to see if they're on the plane. But Eli Apple did travel last week, even though he was inactive.
So did DRC.
Right. Well, he had the jersey on, of course.
Right.
He traveled.
Right. Folks. Again, injuries not an excuse, but they can be a reason. And what you had to understand opening day, when the Giants went into this season with the 53 that they had, they knew that they improved themselves dramatically, especially on defense. But they also knew going in that they were going to need to be fortunate.
Right.
In terms of the injury bug, because there was no question that although the veneer was strong, if there were cracks or breaks in that veneer, there was going to be some drop-off. And that's just the way it is, people.
I will say this, though, and I think this is also fair. While the defense has been banged up, the offense, for the most part, has been fairly healthy. You lost the right tackle, Marshall Newhouse, but you really haven't had much of a drop-off to Bobby Hart thus far.
Well,
I haven't really felt that.
Offense has been self-inflicted wounds and mistakes. That's not because of injury.
Correct. That's what I'm saying. So you can't say, well, you know, injuries, you haven't been able to overcome those on offense.
No.
Obviously, Jennings and Vereen, significant. Not going to argue that, especially Vereen. Though, they have run the ball fairly well the last couple of weeks, to be quite honest with you.
Over four yards per carry. They got enough production.
I agree. So the offense has to fix their issues, which have nothing to do with injuries.
No. And actually, I hate to say this, but you should actually look at that as a positive, because injuries, you can't get a guy back just by saying he's back. But you can fix some of the mistakes that the offense has made without having to worry about some doctor clearing somebody.
Right. And one other thing on the offense, Paul, I want to ask you about it, because I talked to Victor about this after the game in the locker room. We had him one-on-one after the media scrum left his locker. They all ran to Odell, and I got Victor by myself. So I was talking to Victor, and, you know, he talked about, you know, the offense, how you have to get going, you know, this and that, and, you know, the teams are making it hard on us. And I said, well, Victor, have you seen a pattern develop over the last three games? And I didn't watch enough of the Dallas game on tape after that was over to see if Dallas did it too, but I'm guessing they did. That teams have decided that we're going to drop two safeties deep on most plays, and we're not going to let you make the big play down the field, and we're going to make you earn it. And he goes, yes, teams are making it hard. They're making us sustain long drives, and we have not been able to do it. And when we haven't been able to score touchdowns. We've kicked field goals. And really, that's the book right now, Paul. And if you don't think every defensive coordinator in the league is seeing that the last 3 weeks, how do you keep the Giants scoring a lot of points? You don't let them beat you deep. Everybody's seeing it. And to me, the way you get teams out of that, it's not by throwing deep on two safeties deep, because that's not going to work.
Go ahead.
It's not going to be there. You got to punish teams with the running game. If they're going to show you six or seven-man fronts, run the ball 35 times for 185 yards.
Right.
Do it. That's how you get that safety up from the secondary, and you bring them to the line of scrimmage. That's how you do it. I wrote some for Cover 3 today for Giants.com, and I want to throw out one number. And I think a big issue why the Giants are not scoring as many points this year is the fact that they're not getting enough big plays for scores. Now, they've had a decent amount of plays over 20 yards. But so far this year, Paul, how many touchdowns do the Giants have of 20 yards or more?
Maybe one.
Sterling Shepard against the Redskins, 23-yard catch. That's one in four games. Last year, they were third in the NFL of touchdowns of 20 yards or more with 17. That's more than one per game.
Yep.
That's the difference.
Well, look, anybody who has trouble scoring in the red zone, and, you know, I've been talking about this for decades, if you have trouble scoring in the red zone, then you better be able to score outside it before you get in there.
Correct. And they haven't been able to do that.
Okay.
So you agree?
Oh, I'm not disagreeing with you at all.
Okay, cool. I didn't mean to depress you over here. You look very sad.
The problems with this team right now are very obvious. They're very evident. And I do believe that many of them, especially offensively, are correctable. That's to me, that's the good part about this. You can't control some of those mistakes and some of those errors. What you can't control is a guy being hurt and how quickly he's going to get back into the lineup.
Do you want more balance on offense? Who am I talking to? But do you think they should run the ball a little bit more?
Yeah. Come on.
Alex in Pittsburgh, he's up next. How you doing, Alex? I'll let you leave it at that. Everyone knows how much you like
Thank
to run
you.
The ball.
Oh,
okay.
How you doing today?
Old school.
Yeah, how you doing, Alex?
Good, good. I want to piggyback on what you were saying, John, about the defenses making the Giants really beat them with their cover and everything like that. Do you think that it's time for McAdoo to maybe switch his play-calling responsibilities over to Sullivan? I mean, they promoted him from the system, felt that he knew enough of the system to be the offensive coordinator, and maybe through four games it might be time to do that.
All right. I got to put the brakes on for you here because I want to ask you a question, and I'm trying to be very logical about this because emotions do play into it, and people get a little bit twisted with emotion. But let me ask you a question seriously: how many times this year already in a month have you seen defensive backs knock balls away from Giants targets and resulting in an incomplete pass? And in many cases, they could have been a big play.
No,
how many times
I
has
totally
that happened?
Agree with you. I'm just thinking maybe a different perspective might be.
No. But here's what I'm saying.
A little bit of a funk
here's
right
what
now.
I'm saying. The point is that the plays have been there to be made, and the defensive players have made the plays and knocked the ball out of Giants receivers' hands more often than not. So that says to me it's not the play calling that's bad.
Yeah, the ball's moving up and down the field. You know, Alex, you brought up earlier in the show, they're sixth in the league in terms of yards per game.
That's
so
what I'm trying to say.
I think the play calling's okay. And the one thing I didn't mention, I wrote in that Cover 3 article too, Alex, and then I'll let you finish. I think there are a lot of 50-50 balls
this year. They're not winning any of them.
that the Giants are not winning. And, you know, last year, and I said this with O'Hara yesterday too, my big refrain last year, Paul, was when the team was struggling, somebody just go out there and make a play. And the problem with last year, in a lot of cases, especially on defense, they didn't have enough talented players to make those plays. Well, you know what? On both sides of the ball this year, they have enough talented yes. guys to go out there and make plays, whether yes. it's getting a takeaway on defense, which they still have zero, by the way, or getting a sack on defense, or going up there and catching a one-on-one ball down the sideline, Odell Beckham Jr. on some type of other cornerback. I don't care who it is. Go out there, or Cruz, or Shepard, Donnell, Ty, whomever. Go out there and make a play that's above the X's and O's that helps out your offensive coordinator and doesn't make it all about the play design. Be better than the guy you're going against and go out there and make a play.
I have this conversation, and I think I've been having this conversation a lot over the last 3 weeks, even the win over the Saints.
Shepard's really been the only above X's and O's plays by a wide receiver.
And that's it. And go Shepherd back.
Dallas, that's it.
And go back and look at the tapes. Go back and look at the plays and say, okay, how many times did you open up your eyes, drop your jaw, and say, wow, that was a really good play? Giants haven't been making any of those.
I mean, Paul Perkins, the screen pass was one. He made about four guys
he
miss
did.
On that. Sure.
That, you're right. There was one last week. You're right. I had to look through a magnifying glass to find it, but there was one.
Yeah.
And that's the problem here.
And that's from their fourth running back.
And even though I would like to run the ball a little bit more, I don't have a problem philosophically with the play calling here. I don't think that's it. I think when the ball is put in a receiver's hands for a 25-yard gain on 3rd and 12, and then a safety comes out and rips it away, I'm not blaming that on the play caller. I'm not. I'm not going to do it.
All right, Alex, finish up. Sorry about that.
I totally agree with both of you guys. What I'm kind of thinking of is when we got Cruz back and we're drafting Shepard and obviously OBJ, I thought around the Giants community and the league was that we'd be able to move them around and interchange them between all the different wide receiver spots, and I feel like we just don't see that as much, and we had much success with that last year, moving OBJ around, getting him into space, getting him on mismatches. And it feels to me that we're not getting that as much this year.
Well, that could be.
It's a fresh air, maybe type of thing to give someone else that idea, and then maybe McAdoo can focus on other things, type of like our penalties, our players going a little crazy every once in a while type of thing.
Thank you, Alex. Appreciate the call, my friend.
All right. I only want to say this. I don't know what the numbers are now. The whole night game really messed me up on the road in terms of my schedule for doing things.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But here's what I will tell you. Going into this past weekend, the Giants' three receivers, and David Deal said this on the MSG show last week, they had over 700 combined yards receiving, which was the most of any trio in the National Football
League. And all three were on pace to finish with more than 1,000 yards. And I can't remember the last time that happened.
How can you possibly complain about that? I mean, no.
And the Vikings' defense is really good. They did this to the Packers. They did it to the Panthers. They do it to everybody.
Okay. So, I know. When you take a step back and you remove the emotion, you say to yourself, again, what's worked, what hasn't worked, and you have to say, for the most part, this receiving core has been darn good. Well, again, you want more. You always want more. We're all greedy. But that's not what's broken here.
And again, we went through the numbers, folks. They're sixth in yards, so they're moving the ball. They're not making big plays for touchdowns, and they're not scoring touchdowns in the red zone. And if you can't score in the red zone and you can't score on big plays, when the hell are you scoring touchdowns? You're not. That's the problem.
I mean, how about the first drive? Pull up your play-by-play. Do I have the play-by-play?
I can bring it up. You know what? I had it on my desk. I forgot to bring it, and I have it there. Okay. I'll bring it up. Hold on.
Play-by-play the Vikings game, first drive of the game. The place is rocking. And I can tell you because I was on the field, okay? Mm-hmm. The place is rocking. And what do the Giants do after the big horn? The big horn and all the clapping and everything they do out there.
By the way, I want to give the Viking crowd credit.
It's a great place.
Dude.
Great place.
And their whole, like,
the crowd
chant
is incredible.
Thing between plays, the skull. It's just a great atmosphere.
It's a fun place to be.
Fun place.
Very fun place to be. But what do the Giants do with the first possession, John? They go right down the field.
Then I
penalty, go back to the drive chart.
No, it's right here.
I was just going to go to the drive chart. That's all right.
This works, though, right?
Yeah, that works fine. They go right down the field.
They start at their own 40 on a good kickoff return by Harris.
And they're in field goal range.
Correct.
And what happens?
Penalty on Eric Flowers. False start. Backs
Boom.
Him up to the 38.
And guess what? Now they come away with 0 points.
And by the way, even if they would have came away with zero there, they punt it. Brad Wing does a great job, pins the Vikings at the one.
Yes.
They, defense, great job. Three and out.
Yes.
Then what happens on the punt?
Giants wind up giving the ball away.
So, let's see. Just on the first two possessions
penalty
of the game.
Penalty and turnover.
Bingo. That's why you're losing football
Not
games.
The play calling, folks. Not the play calling.
Because if Harris...
Thank you.
If Paul, and I said this yesterday, and I think I had general agreement from Twitterverse, by the way, which is a bizarre and odd thing. I thought the turning point of the game was the Harris fumble in the first quarter. It shifted field position for the whole game, and it set the Vikings up for a touchdown. And once a team like the Vikings has the lead on you, and they would eventually go up 14-0, it's really hard to get it back.
To me, it was twofold. I thought the penalty, which resulted in no points on that drive, was huge, especially the first drive of the game.
No argument.
When the place was in a lather for their Vikings, and I get that. But right then and there, I said, okay, this is a very big turning point right there. And then, of course, like you said, Harris just made it worse.
All right. 2008, when good job by Dave Dominic. I don't know how you found this so quick, Dave. Excellent work. Leave it up there. So it's happened five times in total history where three receivers have finished with 1,000 yards.
I thought you were going to say Giants.
No.
I'm like, no way.
No, and over on the NFL. It's only five times. And
okay.
It's a long history. The last time was 2008. It was the Arizona Cardinals. Can you name the three wide receivers on the Cardinals that year? One is easy. Two are pretty easy. And then the third one's tough.
Well, it's Fitzgerald and Bolden.
Correct. The third guy's hard. The third guy's really hard.
It wasn't centers, right?
No.
He caught like a million passes.
No, centers was way early 2000s for Cardinals. That's a good guess, though.
I'm trying to think.
It's probably his only 1,000-yard season.
Oh, yeah, because he never did much after that?
No.
All right, what do you got?
Steve Breaston.
Wow, yeah.
You wouldn't have gotten that, right?
Another couple of minutes I probably would have.
Now, I thought that the run-and-shoot Oilers might actually have had 3,000-yard receivers in the early 90s. They did not. The four other teams that did it were Dan Fouts' Chargers in 1980.
Yes, that I knew.
With Winslow, Jefferson, and Joyner, right, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
The Redskins in 89, that would be Gary Clark, Ricky Sanders, and Art Monk, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
How about I remember that?
But those two were easy.
95 Falcons.
That's a tough one.
Andre Rison.
Yep.
Was Terrence Mathis on that team?
Yep.
No, not Terrence Mathis?
No, not Mathis.
Oh, what happened?
Rison's wrong.
Rison's wrong, huh? Was that Mathis and was Eric Metcalf there in 95 too?
He would not have been a 1,000-yard receiver, though.
No, he was for a couple years for them, I think.
I don't think so.
Metcalf, Mathis, and Bert Emanuel. So I have two out of three there.
That's good. You got me on that one.
And then 2004 Colts was obviously must be Marvin Harrison, Reggie Wayne. Marcus Pollard? Oh, is 04 too early for Reggie Wayne? No, I don't think so.
Whoa, that Colts team had 3,000-yard guys?
Oh, Brandon Stokely had 1,000 yards
Stokely.
That year.
That would have fooled me, too.
Wow, so I actually got a lot of those. I was pretty happy with myself.
I would have had the Chargers and Redskins.
Yeah, that's not easy. Yeah, no. Eric Metcalf led the Falcons in receiving that year with 1189, by the way. Yeah.
Wow.
Remember he went there and he became a full-time wide receiver after he was kind of that swing guy for the Browns?
Well, he was a slot guy.
Right, and he was kind of their kick returner. He was a great kick and returner, punt returner.
Yeah, no question.
It's fantastic.
So anyway,
sorry, that was a bit of an aside.
That's okay.
Q and East Orange, you're up next. Get us back on track, Q.
Hello.
How you guys doing?
Hi, Q.
Hi.
I wanted to touch on the recent media explosion about Odell Beckham. But before I talk about that, I wanted to talk about I overheard Paulie D. You said that you wanted to put that more responsibility on our ends, JPP and
Olivia Vernon.
Yeah, Vernon.
I'd like to see an impact game out of one of those guys right now. And playing well is not good enough at the moment.
What is it, one sack between the two of them in four games?
It's not enough.
It's not enough. I mean, we talked before the year, Q, and I think Paul said you wanted 25 between the two, or was it 20?
I wanted 25 between the two of them.
Well, one through four games ain't getting you to 25.
No.
Okay, but my thing is, okay, how about that same pressure? How about put that on our franchise quarterback, Eli Manning? How about put that same pressure on him to – instead of throwing, you know, I kind of didn't like the fact how you threw Odell, you know, under the bus. You know, kind of, you know, and he hasn't been playing lights out. And I'm not saying like I want I don't want to, you know, blame him, but when you're the franchise quarterback, I think you should play much better than he has played. I think that his accuracy is terrible. It's always been. I don't want to get into all that. I mean, I'm going to be honest. I think Eli Manning.
You're
Eli
barking
Manning
up the wrong tree,
the
man.
Most accurate quarterbacks. His accuracy is not his. It's not his. You're not going to hang your hat on his accuracy. And I watch every game. I never miss a game. And he threw a lot of high balls. And he threw a lot of balls.
Now, Q,
that, you know,
in fairness. Q, neither Paul or I will tell you that Eli was at his sharpest against the Vikings.
No doubt.
He was not as sharp as against the Vikings. He had that the pass on the third down early in the game to Sterling Shepard over the middle. It came out of his hand wrong. He floated it. It was not a good throw. I'm not going to argue with that. Eli was not at his best against the Minnesota Vikings. But first of all, I didn't hear him throw Odell Beckham Jr. under the bus on that post play,
yeah,
to be honest with you.
He made a statement and he said that you know, I'm not paraphrasing. I'm quoting what he said. He said that he kind of brought you know, the things, you know, the attention and everything, the negative attention or from the media to itself, which is true. But you shouldn't. You should be the last person to.
Does that relate to that interception?
It doesn't. It doesn't relate to play on the field, though. Q.
Well, if you let me explain, I will explain.
Please,
I would like
go
to
ahead.
Explain
away.
Well, first of all, the interception that he threw was a Hail Mary. He should have never threw it because it was, first of all, the defender was had good positioning on that play in the first place, the cornerback. And that was a Hail Mary, and he should never throw it. And that's
disagree
another,
on that.
Oh, okay, well, that's your opinion, and I'm going by what I think.
Yes, sir. I understand.
I was on the field, and that was right in front
pass.
Of me.
He should have never threw that pass.
Oh, Q, he had single coverage down the field on a corner. Even if the corner
angle on the deep pass, he had the defender had. He was in a good position.
Yeah.
He was
on his back
was
shoulder.
It was a badly thrown ball, but
correct.
The decision was not
bad.
The decision was good.
Yeah, Q. If you want to say that he threw a terrible ball,
that's fine.
No argument. But
bad
I,
ball.
I don't mind him because here's the thing,
it's
Q.
A good decision.
So far this year, Odell Beckham Jr. has had one-on-one coverage down the field. Deep a handful of times. That's how much attention people are paying to him. So if you're going to have single coverage down the field on Beckham, and look, he's one of the best receivers in football. You take the chance on the one-on-one coverage. Now, they didn't execute the play properly,
right.
And that's more than fair to kill him on. We're not going to argue that. But I don't mind him deciding to go there when you have your best wide receiver one-on-one with the safety playing catch-up because he had dropped down from his deep safety position.
If you're going to say that, then you should say that for the other two games in which he was – and I'm glad you said that because it appeared to me in the first two quarters it's like Eli Manning wasn't even looking his way. And when they show replays of – I've seen several matchups where Odell Beckham was like man on man and he was talking to people on the sideline like, he's not throwing me the ball. And then the camera went away from him. The camera was following Odell that entire game. Like they were on him.
The receivers are not very open in that game. Shona Harrow was on the show yesterday. He watched the tape, and he said there were not a lot of wide receivers.
Every receiver thinks he's open on every play. Let's just understand
I'm not,
that too.
I'm not speculating on what I think. I'm going by what I seen when they ran a play was ran. I don't know exactly what it was. The play was ran. It was a passing play, and Odell Beckham was man on man, and it was no safety help. And then you seen him, the camera followed him on the sideline, and he was, like, shrugging his shoulders, talking to a teammate, saying he's not – and I was reading his lips, and he was like, he's not even throwing me the ball.
Q, let me just say this. And even when there's an isolated camera on a receiver and a defensive back, often what they won't show you when they show you that is the clock and how quickly the quarterback had to go through his progressions and get rid of the ball.
And also where the safety is.
They don't always show you that.
I just want to make a point.
Let me ask you, before you do that, though – how many times are you actually at the game in the stadium and can see the whole field, not just what's on the TV screen? Do you get a chance to get to the games a lot?
I have NFL Rewind.
Game Pass.
So you can look at those.
I actually go on the app, and that's what I'm going to do when I get off the phone. Because
that's
I
good.
What I've seen.
That's good. Because that's a lot better than what you're seeing on the television.
Correct.
Okay,
but even that, all the time.
What I'm saying to you is that, in a nutshell, is that Eli Manning, if he's the leader of the team, we should be throwing anybody under the bus because you're not the most accurate quarterback, you know, in the NFL.
IQ. What else do you have? We're going to disagree on that point. But okay, go ahead.
And my the another thing that I've seen that I really don't like, and it's bothering me, is that, you know, Spagnuolo is doing a lot of safety and cornerback blitzes, and you're blitzing Cromartie, and I mean he's probably our best defensive back in cover. Why are you blitzing him? And the thing that's making it even more madder is that they're not getting there.
Q, first of all, I agree. The blitzes aren't getting there that's what I'm saying. The blitzes aren't getting there as well as they should. I agree with that, Q. But Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie hasn't played in two games.
I still don't like blitzing your best corner. Why are you blitzing your best coverage guy?
All right. A couple things. First of all, he hasn't played in a game and a half. That's first. Okay, because he's been out of the lineup. But in terms of why would you blitz DRC, I will tell you the reasons why. He is the quickest coming off of that slot spot. If you're going to send a corner, okay?
You have to send your slot guy.
He's the quickest one, okay? And he has – hold on. Because when you blitz, if you don't get there, you pay for it. So you're not going to blitz a guy who's not quick enough to make the quarterback pay. Cromartie is the quickest guy, and he's coming out of the slot when
they
do it.
But he hasn't been getting it, Paulie.
Hold on.
That's my gripe.
Hold on. He also is the tallest with the most length. So there's a possibility, even if he doesn't get there, he will clog a passing lane. Eli Apple's not going to do that. Cromartie's got more length. Cromartie has the opportunity, if he does come in from a corner blitz from the slot, he could wave down that passing lane, and he can cause trouble even if he doesn't get there. There is some benefit to sending DRC off
but
a slot blitz.
Okay, but what?
There
why,
is some
why
benefit.
Unnatural for anyone to say anything negative about Eli Manning. Like Eli Manning is. I mean, he has flaws too.
I literally just said 3 minutes ago on this call that Eli Manning did not have his best game against the Vikings.
And he threw a poor pass on the pick.
What else do you want from me?
The offense hasn't been playing well in four games.
They're sixth in the yards. Final thing. Yes, stats matter. They're sixth in the NFL in yards. Have they been good in the red zone? No. Have they turned
there
the ball over
go.
Too much?
Yeah,
no.
Can
you
I? Whoa.
Right
let me ask you this.
All right, Q, we got a gun bump.
Yeah, we gotta go to the next call.
Yeah.
But every drop pass and every pass that's been defended or broken up out of a receiver's hands, that's on Eli Manning? That's his fault? Really, John? Did I miss something here? Does the quarterback go to the receiver and tell him to drop the ball? Does he go to his receiver and say, let that guy knock it out of your hands so that it's not complete? Does the quarterback do that?
I mean, here's the thing. Did you see Eli miss a lot of open wide receivers against the Vikings yesterday on Monday? He missed one or two. I mentioned that Shepard play in the middle on that first down conversion, but there weren't a lot of guys open.
It's the quarterback who takes the heat all the time.
Of course.
That's what this is.
Mm-hmm.
It's all right.
I'll tell you what, though. I have seen a lot of it on Twitter, though. People are – unfortunately, what I'm seeing is side-taking between 13 and 10, which you don't want to see.
No.
From the fan base. Because they need each other. And quite frankly, Odell Beckham wouldn't be Odell Beckham if Eli Manning wasn't throwing the ball the last 2 years. And Eli Manning wouldn't be Eli Manning the last 2 years if he didn't have Odell Beckham Jr. to throw the ball to. It's a team sport. They need each other. They're both very good players.
And, again, multiply it out. Odell's on pace for, what, almost 90 catches and over 1,000 yards.
And to
right?
say, and by the way, he had 9 targets on Monday. How many targets do you want him to get? 9's a healthy number.
He had over 14 a game last year because there was no one else to throw the ball to.
Right. I mean, I think between 10 and 12 per game is as much as you're going to get, given who else is on this roster. Anyway, 201-939-4513. My call screen says Sean in California wants to talk about Green Bag, but I'm considering that he wants to talk about Green Bag. So I'm thinking that's where you want to go. What's up, Sean? How are you?
Trash bags are great.
How you guys doing this morning?
Good morning, Sean. It's an early one for you.
I want to thank you guys for what you guys do for us. I mean, like, it's just crazy. I mean, like, 2 weeks ago, everybody was on cloud nine, and then now everybody's back down to earth.
You know, it's Sean. It's
just to our Giants fans out there. We lost the Redskins games due to our turnovers. Redskins was hungry. They came in and they won. We were supposed to lose against the Vikings on paper. The Vikings are a legit team. Everybody needs to calm down. We're not going to go 6-10. Then I hear all this, you know, Eli Manning talk. Eli Manning did the right thing to address it early, move it out of the way. Next thing on my mind, I mean, like, Green Bay is winnable. Ravens is winnable. Rams is winnable. We just need to stop with turning the ball over. We need to focus. The reason why we can't get to the quarterback is because, you know, we got our defensive lineman going off the field, getting a cup of Gatorade, taking a sip, and then coming back on the field. Our offense needs to stay on the field longer to give guys like JPP a break, give Olivia Vernon a break, give Snacks Harrison a break, all right? Next thing's next. I mean, like, well, I think what will work if we give Odell Beckham, you know, 1st and 10, our first possession of the game, do like something like a wraparound, give him the ball early, let him run it, let him get into the game. I think he loves the game so much. He's a passionate receiver, and the reason why he's getting so upset is because he wants to win. You know, he's a winner.
I agree with that.
He's not a loser. He wants to win.
He's a competitor, Eli Manning, no question.
Yeah, he's a competitor, exactly. Eli Manning just needed to get it out there for it's not hurting us later on down the road. We are going to turn it around, and I see us coming out big with a win on Green Bay. I watch the fans call on Monday and Tuesday and watch the whole show be different. It's crazy. It's like we lose a game, and then all the vibes turn. The reason why I called in today is basically – I was watching I have DirecTV, so I'm able to watch every single game.
Good for you.
And I'm in California, and it's kind of, you know, they don't air the game, so I decided to just go with Sunday Ticket. Well, I was watching Trevon Reid, and yes, he was taken advantage of. What I found out yesterday is I want to know your guys' taste on this. I know if you were to bring him in, he wouldn't be able to start eventually because he needs to learn our offense, but it's always about the next man up. But guess what? The next man up is not really doing so good, you know? And imagine how different the Vikings game would have been if we had, you know, Eli Apple back there at DOC and we had Thompson. That would have been a whole different game. And I believe we played not a great game, but we played pretty good, and people have to understand the Vikings is legit. The Vikings is a legit defense. Look what they did against Cam Newton. Look what they did against
Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah,
Aaron Rodgers, thank you.
They've beaten three teams in a row with MVP quarterbacks.
It's not like we lost against, you know, a team that, like, lost first straight. I'm not, you know, it's not we lost against a legit team, guys. We lost against a Super Bowl contending team.
Sean, you know what, you're right, and I want to add a couple things to what you said, and I feel like you know, after the first 2 weeks, I feel like the guy that's at the house party trying to get everybody to calm down so the cops don't show up and people are way too excited. And then after 2 losses, I'm there with a hose and a fire truck trying to keep the house from burning down because people are losing their minds. I mean, I think
exactly. And you know what's funny, John, is like, and Paul, is like the Redskins had our number the past previous years. They had our number.
And I mean, so on like the other thing, too, and you know, you mentioned the Eli thing, and Q brought this up. All I've heard from fans, we've been doing this show since 2008. How many times have you had fans call up and say, I want Eli Manning to be a vocal leader? Then all of a sudden he's a vocal leader, and then I got people complaining about it.
and I'm not trying to get at, you know, my man who just called in, but it was a broken coverage from Odell Beckham because Odell Beckham's mind wasn't in the game. He was supposed to run a straight route. He ended up slanting.
Here's what happened on that play. Look, and I appreciate your perspective because you're a good fan and a good call, and I thank you very much for that.
Don't cut me off yet. I have one more thing to say, but okay. I'll let you finish.
I would only say this. When the team wins, fans don't want to hear about the flaws that you think can be corrected to make them better.
Correct.
When the team loses, they don't want to hear about the things that are actually working correctly.
Correct.
That you can possibly build on. It is always going to be the inverse.
And Sean, the other thing, too, is that, you know, people don't tend to realize and I've said this a million times before, and I'll say it again, how thin the line is between winning and losing in this league. There's literally 1 to 3 plays a game that can turn a win into a loss. I mean, just go back to some of these games the last few years. If one receiver doesn't catch a pass, if one receiver drops a pass, if somebody doesn't commit a holding penalty, just go back to the 2011 Super Bowl. What happens if Ted Ginn Jr. suits up in that game? What happened if, even if he can't run, what if he just goes back there to catch punts and he calls a fair catch every time. The Giants only have one Super Bowl in the Eli Manning era. Because you know why? If Kyle Williams doesn't fumble those two balls, the Giants lose the game. That's how thin the line is between winning and losing. Now make your final point, Sean. Go ahead.
And exactly. And to top that off, it's like we're being ourselves. We're not getting smashed. You know, our defense is everybody's new. Everybody's trying to, like, not new, but everybody's new together and trying to play. I think, you know, later on in the season, we will be able to click and we will be able to play like the Vikings defense, you know. My point is, Antonio Clamorti just got released from the Colts. I think we should consider bringing in another veteran like Antonio Clamorti for later on in the season, just in case we have, you know, problems like this where we don't need to rely on, you know, Trevon Reed. I'm not saying he's a bad player, but I'm just saying if we can pull in another veteran like Antonio Clamorti, I think we'll be a little bit more secure for our backup spot.
Appreciate
I'll leave it at that.
Thank you, pal. Good call. Let me say this. I don't mind bringing in another veteran for depth. That's fine. I don't like that name because if you watch the Colts play in London against the Jaguars, he might as well have had a big red target on the back of his jersey.
He did play
well. They went after him again and again, and how many defensive penalties did they call on him in that game? He was grabbing and holding and committing pass interference penalties. Paul, I don't think he's got a lot left in the tank. You know how bad that Colts defense is?
Yeah.
For them to cut a corner, he must have a lot of problems.
His resume over the course of time has been good.
Correct.
But lately, not so much.
Correct. All right, two more calls before we say goodbye. Let's go to Mark in Chicago. Mark, you had to be quick yesterday so you can make the rest of your points today. What's going on, pal?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hi.
Love the show. I'm addicted to it, actually.
Thank you.
Anyway, I wanted to get back to a couple of points you guys brought up earlier about what has worked. And, John, you brought up about the running game. You know, one of the benefits of being retired is I can go back and break down the game a little bit. And the Giants ran play-action passing in the first half. They were 5 of 5 on play-action passes. They were 6 for 7, and the one drop on the seventh pass was that Cruz play. And you brought up how we only ran the ball 6 times yesterday. You know, Eli is not a creative quarterback. He's a good play guy, you know, run the play. And I think we're getting away on the play calling from what makes Eli a strong quarterback. We had the running game, and we sort of went away from it. When you run a play-action pass, it freezes up those linebackers. It freezes up that slot guy. It opens up the middle, and then we can maybe break some of those long plays that you were talking about.
Mark, I will add
this.
Our
play calling has been pretty poor.
I will add this real quick. The one thing I think Eli Manning's done a wonderful job of this year in terms of pre-snap stuff, I've seen him change the play from pass to run many times,
yeah.
And that turns into, you know, 6, 7, 8, 10, 12, 15-yard gains on the ground. Because I think what we've talked about, Mark, is how teams are playing 2 safeties deep. And if you're playing nickel, they only have 6 guys in the box. If you're playing base, they only have 7 guys in the box. When Eli sees that, if he can and the down and distance allows it, Paul, he's going to switch to a running play.
Sure.
And when he has, I think they've had some pretty good success with that.
I agree with that. His run-pass option selection's been darn good. I don't have as much of a problem as you do, but I would say that it galls me to no end because I'm an old school guy. When you have a 2nd and 1 or a 3rd and 1 and you got to spread the field and you're going to wind up going shotgun and throwing the ball, you see, because again, from my yesteryear days of Fred Flintstone football, it's 2nd and 1. I'm running for that first down. I'm going to pound a rock. I'm going to get the first down. I'm going to move the chains. I'm not taking a 2nd and 1 play, throwing guys out wide, and then chucking the ball 15 yards downfield and hoping I get a completion on a square out. That's just not me. But that's an old-school philosophy. That's not saying that Coach McAdoo or anything that the Giants are doing is wrong. It's just a different fruit. You know, it's an apple compared to an orange. I'm old school. I'm sorry, but that's just the way it is. 2nd and 1, I'm smashing it right down your throat, and I'm getting the first down. That's just me.
Well, Paul, the reason why we can't do it is we don't have blocking tight ends, and we don't have a fullback.
Well, see, now here's the thing. I think that it's a philosophical difference between today's game and the old game. I would have no problem letting Brett Jones come back in like he did during the Dallas game in the fourth quarter. I'd have no problem with going to a jumbo package and putting Brett Jones out there
and still trying to smash the ball for that 1 yard on second down and one. I'd have no problem with that.
Talking to our boy Henry Hanoski, who's now working here in a couple of different departments, he was actually pretty impressed with the job Brett Jones did as the fill-in fullback there for those few plays against
the Bills. You know what I'm saying? I understand. I'm one who's always said to you over the last several years, this has not been a great power-blocking offensive line, and the Giants don't have a very good blocking tight end. I understand what your comment is, but I'm saying in spite of that, on second and one, you got to be able to prove that. You got to try it.
All right, Mark, one more point, then we got to run, okay?
Well, let me make one comment about that, and then I want to ask about blocking on a screen pass.
Sure, go ahead.
There was one play that the Giants ran where they had both Will Tye and Larry Donnell in the backfield, and they ran a running play. They didn't block anybody, and the play gained like 2 yards.
Jarrell Adams, by the way, did get some run late in that game.
Well, again, look who you're talking about, though, in that set. It was Donnell and it was Ty.
And also,
neither one is going to be mistaken for Howard Cross as a blocking tight end.
And we did see Jarrell Adams get more of a chance late in that game once Larry Donnell went out with the concussion, and I thought he did throw a couple nice blocks in the second
Maybe
half.
That's part of the answer. And remember, Will Johnson was supposed to be that answer, and then he got hurt.
Right. Okay, enough about that. I have one question about lineman blocking on screen pass. I was at the game at Washington, and on that Crowder screen, I noticed that the lineman was like 5 yards downfield. On that Perkins play, Richburg, he was like 6 yards downfield. I tried to look up on Google, you know, what the rules are in the NFL for blocking on a screen pass, but it seems like the linemen are – I always thought it was 3 yards. Seems like the linemen are way downfield on these screen passes.
You know what? It's funny. There was actually a play that the Vikings ran a screen late in the game where the guy was actually open and Bradford, I think, threw it over his head in the second half. There was a guy about 15 yards down the field on that play, to be honest with you. You know, Mark, do me a favor. I'm going to let you go, but I'm going to look it up. And by the end of the show, I have the rule book here on my computer in PDF form. Let me see if I can find what the rule is for how many yards downfield you can be. Do you know the rule offhand, Paul?
Here's the thing.
It
doesn't matter what I knew years ago. They get tweaked every year.
Here you go, the rule book. Let me
see. I'm not going to be smart enough or dumb enough to tell you right now I know exactly what it says, because every year we have a seminar with the officials, and they go over a bunch of things that have been tweaked.
Yeah, and a lot of times they don't even mention things that have been tweaked.
So I'm not going to quote myself on this because it would be a mistake.
All right, let's go.
I'd rather tell you I don't know right now.
Adam in Ohio, he will be our final caller of the show. Adam, how's it going?
It's going well, guys. How you doing?
Doing well, sir.
Good. A couple points. First, you know, we're 2-2. I think, you know, the running game was a little encouraging. The line was surprisingly good. We've done enough good things that if we continue to put it together moving forward, certainly the sky's not falling because you just lost to a good defense. You know, I'm pretty encouraged. I'm pretty optimistic about what can happen as long as there's some continuity going. I wanted to ask you a little more about your thoughts on what Q said, because I kind of agree that it was frustrating for me to hear everything Eli Manning said. Well, scratch that. Everything Eli Manning said, with the exception of he brought that on himself, was okay. But with the media running wild with this story, what are you really contributing? What good are you doing by saying Odell brought this on himself? Especially when you don't want to mention that maybe he was hit a little late. The call did come from 30 yards downfield and not the ref who was standing right there. And maybe it was a byproduct of a missed call. I mean, it's just an indictment of the kid's behavior, and the kid's already under enough stress. What really good are you really doing your team in your locker room by throwing that phrase into the interview?
I'm not going to get inside Eli Manning's head. I think that would be wrong and presumptuous of me to do. I do know this, that everything Eli says is meant team first. I've known him for too long to ever believe or even question anything he says as being either self-motivated or throwing responsibility on somebody else. That is not his character. I've known this guy for, all 10-plus years, 12, 13 years of his career. I have never once questioned his motivation or his teamwork style mentality. So whether or not words may have come out a certain way or may have been interpreted a certain way, I'm going to tell you his body of work says to me that there is never any ill will intended on what he says.
Yeah, I'm not questioning his intention, but if you look on any media outlet, ESPN particularly, you know, the big bold quotes and you know,
well,
they chop the quote so they can spin it any way they want.
Well, you know how that
he
goes.
He brought this on himself with a big picture of Eli Manning in the background. It's like, I don't question that he meant it to be helpful or there's no malice behind it, but, man, I think that was a miscue there. That's a behind-closed-doors kind of thing, in my opinion.
And you know what? I think it's very important that everybody understands that he and Odell do have a very good relationship. And
correct.
And I see them on a daily basis and how well they work together. So I don't think there's any kind of fracture there. But I understand your point, and sometimes things are not exactly what they appear to be. That's all
sure.
I would say.
Sure. Well, that being said, let's get to the field. Paul Perkins received well out of the backfield. Bobby Rainey, ball security was good. I called in last week and mentioned that I've never seen Orleans Darkwa fumble, and Howard Cross said, if you jinx him, don't call us back.
I know. I was doing the show.
But he doesn't. I mean, he's reliable. It was
he's a solid player.
They held Eli Manning up. You know, not everyone you play is going to be the Vikings. I think it's going to be exciting when we get healthy and maybe McAdoo starts finding more ways to get the ball into Odell and Sterling and Cruz's hands. Man, those interceptions are a little bit of a concern, but, you know, that's kind of the nature of the beast when you throw the ball that many times.
Exactly.
Thank you for the call, my friend.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Can I end with one point before you get to the rule?
Sure.
I want to just say this because this was an uplifting call. He happened to mention, by the way, Eli being upright. This was the same Minnesota defense that sacked Cam Newton 8 times the previous week. You want to take a positive out of the game? Eli was back there a lot the other night, Minnesota. He didn't go down 8 times, did he?
He sacked 0, and I think he only got hit 3 or 4, maybe?
To my point.
Right.
So you want to feel good about something? Feel good about moving forward. This offensive line has actually outperformed, I think, some people's expectations.
Here we go. All right. Legal and illegal acts. An eligible player downfield. On a scrimmage play during which a legal forward pass is thrown, an ineligible offensive player, including a T-formation quarterback, is not permitted to move more than 1 yard beyond the line of scrimmage before the pass has been thrown.
Wow.
I will say that play is interpreted and dealt with these officials very liberally.
I'm not going.
And I'll leave it at that.
I'm not going any further.
I think that's fair, no?
Let's say goodbye.
I have one more question for me. Will you promise to give me an honest answer?
Yeah. Why am I not?
This goes back to you saying you're an old school guy. And you told me when you got to Minnesota on Sunday, you watched a 4 o'clock game that was on Fox. You watched the Cowboys and Niners?
I watched a lot of that game, a lot of second half in particular.
Does it drive you nuts seeing how the Cowboys run their offense?
I understand, though, what they're trying to do.
No, that's what I'm saying, though. That's you like the way they do that with the running and the play action and everything off the run. That's like your type of deal,
well,
right?
Yeah, but I also understand why.
Well, they have the personnel to do it.
Yes.
Of course. I was just wondering if that drives you nuts.
No, because I understand it. It doesn't drive me nuts.
Okay. That's it. Just
okay.
Curious.
Very good. That was easy.
No, because I figured there's a team in the division that really does run the offense where if Paul Dottino – was the general manager of a head coach of a football team.
If I was the head coach, GMs don't call the plays.
No, but you would want to be both because you'd want to get the personnel to do it, and then you want to do it.
Oh.
You would want both jobs.
I think the stress would be too much for me. I would never sleep.
You'd make it about 2 games.
Yeah.
Then you'd die.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's very true.
For Paul Dottino, I'm John Schmoke. That's Big Blue Kickoff Live. Tomorrow, he's back, and he's got Howard Cross with him, and you can call up and complain to Howard. For Paul Dottino, I'm John Schmoke. We'll see you tomorrow on Giants.com. Have a great day, everybody. Take it easy.